Hello and welcome to another episode of the Grains West podcast, farm succession planning, experience, and advice. I'm your host, Jeff, and Grains West magazine is published by Alberta Grains. It's our goal to connect farmers, food, and ideas. To read our exclusive online-only stories or subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, you can visit grainswest.com. In today's podcast, Grains West contributor Trevor Back discusses farm succession planning with Dennis Duncan, a Sylvan Lake area farmer who has gone through the process. Back also talks with Muhammad Yagi, the lead author of an RBC report that addresses farm labor and focuses heavily on farm succession. Financial advisor Clark Lowry also offers advice on succession planning.
Dennis Duncan farms just north of Sylvan Lake at Cooley Ridge Farms with his wife Lori, two daughters, and two son-in-laws. It's the first year they're all working together now that their succession plan has been finalized. The 2,000-acre farm is a mix of the usual prairie crops. They exited the dairy business in the last few years. Now, at 66, Dennis is on his way out of farming, and that's by design. He plans to retire by age 71. He has no intention to be calling the shots in his 70s, 80s, and beyond, as he's seen other farmers do. His succession plan was unique, as they all are. He has another two daughters who live away from the farm and needed to be included in the process. The planning began in earnest during COVID. Duncan and his wife Lori are snowbirds who winter in Palm Springs. When the pandemic set in, their kids urged them home due to the uncertainty of the situation. From there, many family conversations focused on the future of the farm. The entire process to build their succession plan took 2 years. Many additional conversations, lots of emotions, and ultimately, a few important talks with professionals outside the family. These included Anessa Good with Farm Credit Canada and Don Osley with Pivotal Accounting.
I learned this a long time ago on farm transfers. With multiple kids, equal doesn't mean fair. And so there's no way a farm of this size that you could possibly keep it together and be fair to all the kids. So we did a questionnaire with the kids. Do you want land or do you want money? And so all the kids come back. We don't want the money. We realize the history and the heritage of the farm. And we will, you know, we would rather keep the farm going. All four kids agreed. So down the trail, we were going to give the two city girls some land and or acreages, you know, in the process of succession. And they come back this spring and said, you know what, Dad and Mom, we really don't want land and we don't want acreages or stuff that's going to cause maintenance and future, you know, looking after it, finding renters, finding land renters. So they kind of said if we can swing it somehow, cash would be better. So that helped us a lot because that enabled us to keep the farm together in one chunk and split it between the other two daughters. And as luck would have it, like we would take our investments, would go to the other two daughters, and we have one quarter of land that is several miles from the home stuff that is on the lakeshore. So very, very valuable. So more or less, it was always bought as an investment quarter, even though we farm it. So in order to keep the whole farm intact, the two daughters will receive that quarter and can disperse of it for their, you know, a good portion of their inheritance, and it keeps the rest of the farm together.
There's no set time limit on how long a succession plan and transfer, all that has to take. But you said it was about 2 years. So was it just sort of... Was it just coordinating everyone's busy lives that it just sort of dragged on for 2 years? Or I'm just curious
about that. Absolutely,
yeah. This is not something you can just sit down and hash out in a couple of meetings, Duncan says. There were a lot of questions that needed to be thought through. For instance, when would he retire? He didn't want to be 90 years old and managing every detail of the farm. One day during the process, one of his son-in-laws asked him directly, "So, the day you die, do we become farmers?" That got Duncan thinking he had to get them to step up, see their capabilities, and feel secure that they could run the farm without him.
With your succession plan and everything that's in place now with your wife, your daughters, and your two sons, son-in-laws. You know, how would you characterize it for the timing? Was this something you put off doing? Was this something you felt was the right?
It was wanting to get a plan, say starting 2 years ago, it was wanting to get a plan that I was very comfortable and happy with. And once we got the plan, then it was, what's my timeline? When do I want to quit? And I'm pretty sure by the time I'm 71, I'm okay running a tractor for wages when I want. So, yeah, it was totally me and my wife. It wasn't the kids prodding us. It was us getting the plan together and finally getting something we were all happy with. And it took a lot of meetings with the kids to, you know, they would bring stuff up and they're still bringing stuff up. So we're, you know, little minor tweaks here and there, but the plan is in place and actually being formulated into our wills. And one thing I need to say, Trevor, is we do have some corporate land and some personal. So that really confuses things. But the cool thing about that is that it ends up that the corporate land can be butterflied into the kids' personal corporations tax-free.
Okay.
Which is huge, absolute huge for us. So it really makes a difference when the generation taking over the land is farming. You've been farming it for, you know, 80, 90, 100 years, and they will continue farming. So that eliminates any capital gains on the personal side, and the butterfly of companies, corporate land, into their personal corporations makes it a great deal, a real good deal.
Tell me about those details and taking care of things, because I think for some farmers, that is possibly a hang up where they start to think about all the different aspects of the farm that they're going to need to tie up with a bow, and it quickly becomes a very daunting task mentally. Talk to us about that and how you guys work through all those nitty-gritty details.
It's a very emotional time. Lots of tears, lots of, just lots of uneasiness about, first of all, it comes, can these kids do what I've done? Can they handle this farm? Can they grow as good a crops? And so that's part of this process over 5 years is guiding them. They're making decisions this year on chemicals, seed, fertilizers, the whole bit. So they're really getting their feet wet this year as far as doing it. But the emotional side was very troubling, and I know a lot of farmers just can't let go, and they can do that right till the day they die, and things a mess. And I absolutely did not want that to happen. What I basically said to my wife, it's quite a while ago now, was when I'm on my deathbed and I look down and see my daughters and grandkids' names on those titles of all the land that we farm, I'm happy. I'm good. All the rest is irrelevant. It's all the rest can be worked out, but you've done your job if that's the way it ends up on your deathbed.
They used an outside facilitator from Farm Credit Canada to give them, as Duncan says, a whole whack of ideas to bounce off of each other. That helped begin the process and gave the family the confidence to do this. That initial session with the FCC employee, Anessa Good, helped everyone understand the importance of the situation. From there, they all worked together as a family only to create their plan. Duncan knows he is lucky to have a family that communicates well, as he's known other families who have spent six figures or more on costs related to their succession plans and had nothing to show for it at the end.
And it's just having that point in your life where you can say it's time to let go and it's time to organize. And farmers are about the worst ones to have to do that because of their ties to the land and the business. Well, it's a pretty emotional thing when it's your grandfather's homestead that he cleared the trees on this land. And so you really want it to continue on to the next generation and beyond. So, yeah, it's huge for me. It's not about dollars. It's the history and the heritage is what it's what's so special.
What was it that brought up strong emotions for certain members of the family? Because that's obviously just such a very common thing in any farm transfer, is that emotions are going
to
come out.
I think the part of trying to be equal, trying to give your four daughters equal stake in what you own. And they were great. I don't know if they did research or what, but they realized a long time ago that there's just no way it could be equal. And so I give my two daughters that aren't farming a lot of credit. Both the son-in-laws agreed to sign post-NEPs that the land would never, ever become part of a divorce settlement. Like, that's a huge one for me, because it just, there's so much divorce and, you know, these court battles turn into huge messes. So that for me was a key thing, and they volunteered that. They said, we see the heritage and the history that you want this going to your blood kids, and we understand that, and that's fine. So, yeah, you start adding up all those little things. It just makes the pieces of the puzzle fit together better, and you're happy with it.
Was it as bad or difficult or as onerous as you thought it might have been? I'm curious how you would characterize that.
No, I think the mountain was built a lot bigger than it really was. And it's your mindset that has to get to that point. And once your mind is able to handle it, it's way easier.
Dennis, there's lots of farmers out there, and I'm sure you know some, who they don't have a plan in place, and they're probably at an age where they should have a plan in place. From your perspective, why was it important to have this written down, to have it solidified and just ready to go, in your own words?
Just having the peace of mind that it's a done deal is just huge for me. Yeah, feels pretty good.
He did not take the financial question lightly either. Duncan knew he had to fairly pay out his two non-farming daughters, while the other two farming daughters maintained majority equity. He did not want to saddle the two staying in the business with a significant amount of debt either, if he could help it. He made sure not to let land values and dollars cloud his judgment. After all, as he said, what do those figures matter once he's dead and gone?
What myths or misconceptions were you thinking about before this started? And as you went through the process, were any of them dispelled?
Well, I think that money thing was the biggest thing. That was a misconception that in talking to other farmers, like, you're going to have to sell two or three quarters just to pay the tax, because our land has gone from 60,000 a quarter to 1.5 million. And so you're all scared spitless. You don't even want to think about it. You just push it out of your head, and then another year goes by.
Talk to farmers about that and how you got through that and worked through that question of being fair and equal.
I think the biggest thing I could point to would be four very receptive, reasonably thinking kids that realize that that's the direction you need to go in order to facilitate all of your mom and dad's wishes. And I think greed and all these other things play into things like this, with, so those kind of things can totally jeopardize and deep six any forward movement on a farm transfer.
So it's definitely something you got to keep top of mind, because as you said, you're still around even after the transition happens, right?
Yeah, and the feelings will kill you. I mean, if you get wrapped up in kids not happy with your decision, it can be a mess. And that's why we're so happy it turned out the way we did, because everybody's got a big smile on their face that this is looked after, and they're happy. So I feel for families that can't work those issues out.
Dennis, what advice would you offer to fellow farmers who either don't have a plan or they're thinking about starting the process, but they haven't done so yet?
I would urge you to start thinking about it while you're alive. And, to get to that frame of mind where you want to, then get the proper people in line to help you make that decision.
What's the number one piece of advice you'd offer to farm families in the midst of a transition or about to start one?
Lots of communication, lots of conversations, and get to doing the deal. You really need to, once you've got that plan figured out, is get it in writing and get it implemented once you have made it up. Because it's just a whole lot easier when it's a done deal. And I just feel great about the plan we've come up with, and I think my kids have too.
Entitled Farmers Wanted, The Labor Renewal Canada Needs to Build the Next Green Revolution, the report was published by RBC earlier this year. It focused on what Canada needs to do to maintain a thriving agriculture industry in a decade's time. A portion of that report focused on the succession planning and how farmers must prepare for the future right now. Lead author Mohammed Yagi spoke to more than 500 farmers as part of this research and came to learn that two-thirds do not have a succession plan in place. That, he said, is a problem.
In your own words, tell me about the report, what you discovered as you went about it and compiled it.
And our producers have done a fantastic job feeding Canada, but also the world. But if we don't have the right measures in place to ensure that the next generation can take over, it's going to present some real issues to the country. And the reason why, you know, succession planning is really important is because when you're basically handing the farm down, you want to make it clear and transparent as possible, so that, you know, maybe there might be some conflicts that may emerge from this that may render the land unusable for a few years just because of, you know, proceedings that might happen. So in order to protect Canada's future, and it's a hard conversation. It's not an easy one to have, but one that's necessary because it makes, you know, it's not only for the country, but it's also for, you know, farming families across the country to have a clear plan in place.
The plan itself outlines three key components as answers to the various issues that plague Canadian agriculture. The first is to increase immigration of farm operators by 30,000 people by 2033. Second, to promote an ag education in post-secondaries across Canada. And lastly, accelerate autonomous solutions for farm use. It's easier said than done, but he pegs this trio of ideas as a surefire way to combat the aging population of farmers, whose age now averages 56, and guarantee a smoother handoff to the next generation.
One of the main pieces that jumped out, and it was sort of there in the summary, but also expanded on the report itself, and which basically says that by this time, 10 years from now, in 2033, 40% of those farmers today will be officially retired, or at least retirement age. Excuse me, what does that tell you in light of succession planning, and how is it that this is the situation Canada finds itself in?
If the average age of a producer is growing, and you know there are no succession plans in place, that definitely is a huge risk for the country, and it's something that we're not taking as seriously as we should.
The number that was talked about before, two-thirds of farms in Canada don't have a succession plan in place, is that a problem? Because it seems like a big number.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. I mean, when we're looking at demographics alone, the number of operators below the age of 55 has declined by 54% since 2001. And, you know, we're not having as many younger farmers in the sector. And if we're having older farmers, you know, with their wisdom, of course, which is always great and helpful, but we're not introducing this, you know, agriculture to new farm operators who are younger and who want to join the sector or take over a farm early enough, this definitely does present, you know, a transition crisis. It's a bit of an inflection point for the country. So we need to ensure that, you know, all levels of government take this issue seriously, try to promote that conversation within families, because in order to avoid a huge risk to the sector, as we're seeing right now, because as you said right now in the report, you know, we are seeing 40% of the producers reaching retirement or past retirement age even. And we took into consideration that retirement age is not the average age in, as you know, other sectors of the economy, of course. So we included that within our analysis. But if we're not having a conversation about this now, then it's going to be too late a few years down the line. And it's critical to our own national security as well. I think on an emotional and personal level, a lot of people don't like to have this difficult conversation. And it's a hard conversation. It's not the easiest one to have. From this past generation to this coming generation, there is a difference in terms of how a few folks look at, you know, the farm, the family farm. They may not want to participate. So there's maybe, you know, on a second level, maybe they're not entirely sure. Like, let's say anyone who wants to take over the farm or who are able to take over the farm, maybe they don't want to get involved in agriculture moving forward. Farm values are increasing. The cost of technology and other assets are increasing as well. So at the moment, agriculture also is going through two issues. There's some folks who just don't want to get involved, and that's fair. That's their decision. But I think there's also another issue where it's also really inaccessible for new producers who may want to purchase the farm from their parents. It's not the easiest profession to get started with.
I'm just curious what kind of surprised you as you were compiling the report.
And what was surprising to me was that it took this long for it to become part of the national dialogue, because it's always been an underlying theme for the past few years. It just hasn't emerged, you know, in a national conversation. So that was a surprising part to me, because I think producers across the country know this already. They know these challenges, but I just don't think on a national level it was really understood by the wider public.
What is your biggest message to farmers in all of this and in light of the report that's been produced by RBC?
You know, when we're looking at global challenges, you know, Canadian producers are on the forefront of sustainability, and they're also on the forefront of production. And the world is going to need Canadian farmers more than ever in the next decade to come, not only because of, you know, Canada's ability as a sector, agricultural sector, to sequester carbon and, you know, help the country reach its national emission target, but also when it comes to global food insecurity. Canadian farmers are at the forefront of production, and the world's going to need a reliable food exporter moving forward into the future, one that is also sustainable as well. Canada can become the world's sustainable breadbasket. However, not having these discussions and ensuring a smooth transition puts that our position at risk, the duty to the world as well, in a way. So it's to, you know, having this conversation needs to be done, because it's not only going to ensure our own domestic security, but also ensure that people around the world continue to get fed by Canada's great product.
Clark Lowry is a senior wealth advisor with Wellington Altus Private Wealth and Lowry Wealth Planning, based in Calgary, Alberta. He advises farm families on transition planning and loves to crunch the numbers. He grew up on a family farm in Manitoba and always knew he would be involved in ag in some capacity. His passion for finance has driven him to help families across the prairies ensure their farms are well taken care of for future generations. From what Clark Lowry has seen and heard from clients, farmers want to begin the conversation on succession. The trouble is kicking things off with the initial chat. Nobody would deny the importance of these discussions, and it's clear that once the door has been opened, a discussion framework can quickly be established.
So who is typically leading the process of getting things kicked off? Is it the parents, or is it more the incoming generation?
The next generation, whether it's one or two people who are going to be taking over the farm, sometimes they're the ones that want to initiate this, because they will be, you know, committing to the farm and committing their time and their career efforts towards this. They want to know that this is something that's going to be there for them long term. And sometimes it's the parents who see an issue and they don't know how to go about it or how to fix it or what the most efficient way to do it. If I had to say one, is probably the younger generation that has more questions about how this is going to work. Sometimes the older generation has a plan in their mind, and they might have not been vocal about it, or knowing exactly how that's going to be executed.
It is evident from Lowry's perspective that understanding the ins and outs of a transition is critical. It could be something as simple as an older sibling being in a position to buy into a farm, but a younger teenage sibling who wants the same, yet isn't even finished high school. Much conversation and planning are required to address all questions from family members. Though it may seem counterintuitive, every single family member must be involved in the conversation, even if they aren't the ones taking over the farm. This is done to ensure that years down the road, family members won't be upset by a decision that has been made on the farm or about the farm.
What is the big method from your perspective, Clark, to get out there to farm families within the big conversation of succession planning?
Say you need to identify who's going to be taking over this farm. How do they want to do it? How many people will be involved in that? I think the three things to consider is, one, who's going to be involved? Two, make sure that the retirement plan and the security of the original farmers is considered and that they're going to be able to enjoy the rest of their life without any concerns about where there's going to be revenue coming from. The next one would be the future success of the farm. How do we do this to make sure that the farm can succeed? If you've got four children and one of them's going to take it on, it's not really realistic to expect that one next generation farmer can pay out three quarters to his siblings while running the farm or only one quarter of it. So the farm success down the future needs to be considered. And then the next part would be, how do you fairly equalize some of these assets? So fair is not always equal. I think a lot of people consider or understand that if someone's going to be taking over the operations and involved in the farm day to day and taking on the risks that are associated with that and the burden of future debts and all of the risks that are involved in farm, which we all know are very real, then of course that they should probably end up with more of the pie down the road, and the non-farming children often understand that and are okay with it.
When we talk about the legal side and the tax side, what are the most important items to nail down and make sure you quote unquote get right during a transition?
There might be a corporation involved. There might be multiple corporations involved with an operating company and a holding company. It might be all land that's owned personally. There might be other investments, non-farm investments that are involved. So each situation would be different, but as long as you can go through that process with a tax professional, they're going to be able to point out the specifics of what could happen, what is something to watch out for.
It's also critical to cover all your legal and financial bases. Whether there is one or more corporation involved in the operation of the farm or a holding company, every scenario should be thoroughly discussed. Enlisting the help of a tax professional will be key because they can point out important details and common pitfalls. Today, this even extends to interest rates, passing down a farm to receive beneficial tax treatments, and more. Everything must be carefully planned. It makes sense to do this exercise just once and to do it right the first time.
Is there an example you could maybe give where there were some legal and or tax questions that the family needed to satisfy during a transition that probably lots of families would inevitably have to deal with such a scenario?
Farms and fisheries in Canada have some beneficial tax treatment that will allow farms to pass down from one generation to the next, from farmers to their children or their grandchildren's tax free. Some of the other things that are newer concerns now versus what maybe have been a few years ago is interest rates. So if there's a child or a couple of children that are taking over the farm and potentially wanting to buy out the parents or buy out other siblings, with interest rates as high as they are now, it can make it quite difficult to do so and to operate the farm successfully moving forward if they have a large debt burden that needs to be satisfied. So it can make the splitting of assets more difficult, and there's things that you could do to put in place to make sure that it's not something that would happen all at once if if these prices continue to increase and some of the children have been granted some land and they're not involved in the farm, and if all of a sudden they wanted to liquidate some of those, again, have access to that equity, that could put pressure on the next generation who start trying to start and get established themselves. So there's agreements that can be put in place to avoid that. But with the value of land these days, and the equity that's involved in it, quite often is significantly larger than cash investments or non-farm assets. So trying to equalize it between siblings can be challenging without putting a burden on who's ever trying to take this entity on without having major division amongst the assets.
Is there a way, given what interest rates are today and at the possibility that they could even go a little bit higher, is there a way where a family in the midst of a transition could make the interest rates sort of work for them and they could find a way to carry out the process of transitioning and not have the interest rates just absolutely crush them?
Yeah, there can be different loan agreements amongst family members, but they need to kind of follow the prescribed rate rules. So there are some accounting rules that need to be considered there. I think the one thing that would be considered is that this, if this is going to happen where there needs to be a buyout or some people that are going to be exiting, that it would have to be done over the course of a certain time period where it's not a lot of pressure that needs to be done all at once. That's one thing that could be put in place to avoid a situation where it's going to put the future success of the farm in a tight spot.
If you think that thing, whatever that thing might be, cannot happen on your farm, think again. Lowry has seen it all. From death, divorce, and remarriages, the planning can be tricky, but must be methodical. Sketch out plans for multiple scenarios. Everyone may be alive, well, and happy today, but, of course, things can change. When they do, Lowry warns you must be ready. When emergencies or big tasks require action, you do not want to be caught flat-footed. Lowry notes that farmers are generally quite private. Even though they may have an idea of what they want to occur in a succession, it's not written down formally, and that's a problem. As he says, you have to have a concrete plan. He says it goes as fast as the family wants it to go. Common logistical challenges, he notes, are that not everyone may live as close and could be a day's drive or a plane ride away. For this reason, the process can easily take more than 1 year. At the same time, it's never something that should be rushed unless there is a grave health situation at hand. Lowry says once you link up with the appropriate professionals, everything can be wrapped up within 6 to 9 months.
And that's it for another edition of the Grains West podcast. You can read the digital edition of the magazine at grainswest.com.